Well, tonight we're going to continue our discussion of life in the family name, and we're going to be talking about two of his names tonight. And I was led to put these together, and I wasn't sure why, but I believe you'll get some insight from it tonight. And those names are Provision and Healer. And last week we looked at Peace and spent the whole session on that, looked at Judges 6 and saw what the context was, and how in addition to being told, "Peace be to you," we saw that he was called, he was given a charge, he was equipped. Faith was used, calling him what he didn't think he was. And it just made a lot, to me, it made a lot more impact when I understood him talking about peace in that context. And then we looked at what Jesus said about peace, that "my peace I give to you." And he said that when he was saying, "I'm going to leave peace with you." We talked about the difference in the world's peace and that peace that Jesus gives. And then he himself is our peace. We also then looked at a couple of verses in closing that I just want to read you tonight because it's a stepping stone for tonight. So we looked at Psalm 37:11, which says, "And the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace." So we're supposed to have, as New American Standard says, abundant prosperity in our lives. And it also reminded me then in doing that about what Jesus said to the woman with the issue of blood as she reached out and took her healing, and I believe it brought him joy. And you remember what he said to her? "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed in your affliction." And so what we're going to be talking about tonight is just that, provision and health. And again, we just remind ourselves the same act has purchased us that peace and the two we're talking about tonight. So go with me to Genesis, the 22nd chapter. And we're going to go through the first 18 verses of this because, again, I want us to see the context. And as you go through this, I really want you to see two things. I want you to keep covenant preeminent in your mind. And remember this, that a covenant partner will not ask his partner to do something that he himself is not willing to do. And you're going to see how that opened the door for the Lord, for the Father, the Lord, Jehovah, to send Jesus to the earth. And the second thing that we want to just look at in this account is we've said that in the New Testament, Jesus manifested all the names of the Father. And you're going to see Jesus as a type throughout this entire account. And I think then we'll get a better picture of him also being that peace that provides what? Welfare or prosperity, which ties right into this. So in the first verse, it came about after these things that God tested. I think a better word would be proved or assayed, weighed out Abraham, and he said to him, and he's testing what? His faith and his ability to act in faith in response to his word. And he said, "Abraham," and Abraham said, "Here I am." And in verse 2, he said, "Take your son," and here's where we get into Jesus, "your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will tell you." And so this is where I would say for the first time, and we'll read what the Father says about it later, that a covenant partner does not ask someone who's in covenant with to do something that you yourself or he himself is not willing to do. And then in the third verse, "So Abraham rose early in the morning." And we could stop and teach on that a whole session. Because the longer you wait to act on the word the Lord gave you, the more time you're giving the devil to whisper in your ear and talk you out of it or just twist anything that's going. And I've learned that in my life the hard way. "So he rose early in the morning, saddled the donkey, and took two of his young men with him and Isaac, his son." Now I want to stop there. The word that's used here for young man, I think King James may use lad in a couple of cases. That word is the same word that's used in Genesis 14 for the soldiers, in the young men who are in the army with Abram. So I don't want you to think young men here is meaning teenage boys or even younger, because he refers to them in the same breath, the same type verbiage that he does Isaac, and that's important to us. So he took two of his young men and Isaac and his son, and he split wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place where God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw that place from a distance. And how many of you know that if the Lord tells you to go somewhere, you're going to know when you get to that right spot? But what do you have to do? Act on faith, particularly when you're not sure where you're going to. And then Abraham said to the young men, same word again, about fighting age, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad, that's also the same word. So he's equated, he's placed an age on Isaac in doing that. I and the lad will go yonder, and we will worship, and we will return to you. Words of faith. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, and he laid it on Isaac. And as I was preparing these notes, it was like I just could sense the Lord saying, he put the burden of us all on his son, just like he did Jesus. So Isaac bore the burden as they were going up for him to be sacrificed. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife, and the two of them walked on together. And that phrase, because it talks about it another time, walked on together, literally means that they walked together as one. They were set in agreement. And then it continues on. They came to the place where God had told him, and Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on the top of the wood. Now, the reason I make that point about the age of the lads, this says to me, if Isaac was of that age, and Abraham is well over 100 now, then he was willing to be laid on that altar as a sacrifice, just as Jesus was. And because he made that choice to submit not only to his father, but the will of it. And how that speaks to me, how we as fathers would like our sons, those of us who have sons, to have that kind of confidence in hearing from the Lord that we heard correctly. And that really blesses me. In verse 10, Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son, but the angel called to him in 11 from heaven, and Abram said, Abraham, Abraham. And here again he says, here I am. And he said in verse 12, do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God and have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Again, tying into what the Lord was about to do with Jesus years later. Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, a ram caught in the thicket by the horns. And Abram went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide, as it is to this day, in the mount of the Lord, it will be provided. And I need to note for you that the King James says it will be seen, because that's going to be pertinent to it. Now, something tells me that I didn't make one point in verse 8 that I need to do. I just realized it, that where it says God will provide himself for the lamb, that word there is the word that we would write, R-A-A-H. And it's the same word that is used here for provide, but it literally means to see or to see to it. And it's taken from a word that means shepherd, and it's oftentimes spelled the same way. So what we have here is the Lord saying, or Abraham naming that, the Lord will provide, Jehovah. And then he takes Jireh and makes it from the first part of Jehovah. You remember what Jehovah means, to be or to exist. It can also mean to become known as well as to reveal yourself. But this word, R-A-A-H, Ra'ah, means literally to see. Or we might say to see ahead or to foresee. In other words, it's pre-vision. You see the basic need. And that's actually a definition of provision that is archaic today, which means to see ahead and to provide for the needs. So this is what the Lord has done. He told him to go to that place knowing that he would provide for him that ram. And that makes me just think about, for me, for things that I'm believing for, even for physical things, certainly for financial too. Where was that ram 3 days ago? And the answer is, the only answer I can give you, on the way to that place. Where is your lamb for that need that you have? And I would say to you, it's on the way to get that place where the Lord has told you to be. And that just really blesses me to see that he sees ahead. And it makes me think about Elijah. What did he say? Go there. Go there. Beside the creek and then to the woman who was going to prepare for him. So it's the Lord constantly seeing where he's going to take us to, and our provision is there. And that's one of the reasons we are so comfortable being here in Macon after living in Tennessee for 40 years, is because we know this is that place where we're supposed to be. That this is where our provision, this is where our calling for us in the day is. But again, I just want to note that word also is used, if you look at the Hebrew letters, the middle letter is different between the word to see than it is for shepherd. But it's the same basic construct for shepherd. And we're going to be talking about the Lord is our shepherd in week 8, the last week, because that is the most used type of his relationship to us that we see in the Bible. And so let's look at verse 15 then. The angel of the Lord calls to him a second time after he said, the Lord will provide. The Lord will see to it. He's seen ahead and he'll provide that need. And he says to Abraham a second time from heaven, by myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and not withheld your son, your only son. In other words, because you've given me permission to act in the earth today, which I gave to men, because you as my covenant partner did this, and that means I can. He says, indeed, I will greatly bless you, and I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is the seashore. And then he says, your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies. And that's plural. So we know it's not, I believe the seed is talking in one of these about just Jesus, but it's also talking about us, because look at what he says. He talks about the sand, something here on the earth, and then he talks about as the stars, and he calls both seeds. To me, that's referring to the Jewish people, the physical Jew, and to us as the what? The spiritual, the heavenly part of the kingdom. And so that just creates for me a greater insight into how he views us as believers. And where are we today? We're in the earth, but where are we truly? Seated with him in those heavenly places. And so you see that all the way back in Genesis, where he is taking us to. And all nations will be blessed in Jesus. Now, all nations can be blessed in Jesus. I know it's because he went to the cross. But if we're operating in the family name, then who is going to be the vessels that take blessing to the people today? You got a mirror? Because it's us. And that's how we need to be able to see ourselves living in this family name, being in this seed, receiving this blessing that Jesus has for us. Now, you can see this increase in Abraham. And you know that his servant said, my master is very rich. Did it continue? Did this provision? And also, Abraham entered into this whole account after being told by the Lord that I am what? El Shaddai. Everything that you need, I'm going to provide. And to me, he's saying to him, you don't need to live like a common man anymore, because I am going to provide all you need to live like I'm telling to. So just turn over a few pages to Genesis 26. First verse says, there was a famine in the land besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham. So Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. And the Lord appeared and said, do not go down to Egypt, like his dad did. Stay in the land which I tell you. And look what he tells him is going to happen in that land. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. For to you and your descendants will I give all these lands, and I will establish, or perform, would be a better word, the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. So he's promising him that if he will stay there and be obedient to do what he says, that the blessing is going to follow him. And it has, because Abraham was obedient. And then look down in verse 12. So let's just look at one part of this to see how that blessing continued, that provision continued to flow. Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man became very rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks, plural, herds, plural, and a great household, so great that the Philistines envied him. Now, the key to this to me is not just in that verse, the fact that he sowed, and because the blessing was upon him, he had a big harvest. But what happened when things that he had that he looked to as a source, wells, were taken over by the Philistines? Every time they took one, he went and dug another one. Until finally he said, in essence, his servants came to him and said, we've hit a gusher. Enough to provide everybody. And so you see how walking in that provision, not fearing about what it's going to do, but seeing that the Lord will see ahead and provide. And for me personally today, this is becoming more and more important to me as these days go on. It's a lot, just being honest with you, it takes a lot more faith for me to live retired from a financial perspective than it did when I worked. And many of you can identify with that. But when we have this perspective that he had, okay, you take one well away from me, he's going to give me two more. Because the blessing is working on us. And that's what we see in Deuteronomy 28, isn't it? And just look there, if you would. Deuteronomy 28, and we're going to read 8 and 10, but I want to remind you in 1 and 2, it talks about you got to do everything that I tell you just like I tell you to do. But what do we know? Jesus did that for us. So that if I miss it, I'm not being put over in the curse. Because Jesus fulfilled that, and that's where I am. I'm in that blessing. And this is how we ought to see ourselves in verses 8 through 10. The Lord will command the blessing upon you in your barns and in all that you put your hand to, and he will bless you in the land which the Lord gives you. Now, read that first phrase again. The Lord will command the blessing upon you. That just reinforces to me, you're blessed. Caleb and Matt and Jessica, the blessing is at work in your life today. In this area of provision, but in every area. And then look at the next two verses. 9 said, the Lord will establish you as a holy people to himself. Now, does that remind you of what we talked about in the first week with Jeremiah 13:11 and the scripture in Deuteronomy? I forget where it is, where it says basically the same thing. A people of a name or of renown for his praise and glory. That's what the Lord wants this blessing. That's what the Lord wants this provision to do in us, is to make us be seen in this matter. So he's going to establish us as his holy people to himself, as he swore, if you will keep his commandments of the Lord and walk in his ways. Then verse 10, so that all the peoples of the earth will see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you or fear you. And what are they going to see? How blessed you are in every area of our life. They're going to see that when financial things are crumbling around, that Matt is just as stable as he can be. He's not worried. He's just staying in peace. He's going to see that in the next thing we're going to talk about, that when the plagues come about, we don't worry about them coming upon us. And we're protected by it. 1,000 may fall at one side, but that pestilence is not coming near me. And then I want to look at Psalm 67, the 5th through the 7th verse. And we got about 4 more scriptures that we're just going to go through fairly quickly here. But I want you to, as we read these verses 5, 6, and 7, I want you to think about the Jewish people. And no matter what's going on with them, have you ever noticed how they have an expectation that that blessing that the Lord spoke over them is coming and that they're going to prosper and that they're going to be a wealthy people with all the innovations and ideas? And they just expect it. And this psalm just says to me, raise my expectation up to the same degree. Look at verse 5. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. The earth has yielded its produce. Now let's stop. Think about Isaac. There's a famine in the land, but for him, the earth has yielded its produce. And so for me, that says if we've got money invested in places, we can expect it to produce even when things are going the other way, if we'll believe it. And I have lived this part of it back in 2008, right after I retired in my life. Now, it has nothing to do with me, but it has all to do with me being placed in Jesus, because God, our God, blesses us. And that blessing that was spoken from the very beginning, be fruitful and multiply, is coming to pass in this. And then it gives us a purpose for that blessing. Provision with a purpose. Money with a mission. I mean, however you want to say it. God blesses us that all the ends of the earth may fear Him. In other words, Him being our provider is a major testimony. How do you think the Arabs feel when they come against Israel in 40 different ways, and every time they get their rear ends kicked and Israel prospers more, no matter what is going on? This is the same expectation that you and I need to have of ourselves, for ourselves. Psalm 35:27. Let them shout for joy and rejoice who favor my vindication, and let them say continually, the Lord be magnified, who delights in the prosperity of His servant. So let's say it differently. Let the Lord be magnified, for He delights in providing to His servants. Or we might say, the Lord delights in giving good welfare to His servants. Now, do you remember what that word is for, that we've used prosperity, provision, and welfare for? It's the word shalom, peace. That same. So you begin to see how all these just intertwine together, and you see that same nature of the Lord just being revealed, of wanting to place you up high above all things. And then look at Isaiah 61 through 3. Arise, shine, for your light is come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For behold, deep darkness will cover the earth, and deep darkness the peoples, or darkness and deep darkness the peoples. The Lord will rise upon you, and His glory will appear upon you. And we talked last week about, and the week before, I guess, also about name and the glory. He's placed His name there. And where His name is, His presence is there, which means what? His glory is. And all that's in you, in that little temple that He's placed down in our mission, in our inner being. And then verse 3 said, and all nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. Now, how is this going to happen? It's going to happen as we manifest His name in the earth so that peoples see. Wealthy and prospering and provision is not about a certain amount of money. It's about, as we'll see in a moment, having your needs met and having an abundance then to bless others. I better move on. Basically, what he's saying here is this blessing is going to come on you because I'm Jehovah Jireh. That's really what it goes back to. And quite often, I separate that Jehovah Jireh out from a lot of other things around me thinking about provision. How blessed are we? Oh, I love this next two verses. Deuteronomy 7:14, you shall be blessed above all peoples. There shall be no male or female barren among you or your cattle. In 15, the first part says, and the Lord will remove you from you all sickness. And so that's going to be a great lead-in to where we go in just a moment after we look at two more verses. So how blessed are we? Above all people. I can remember in 2008 standing at my front window overlooking my neighborhood. This was after I retired when the market had fallen and I watched the investment levels that we have go to a certain level. I prayed about it. The Lord said one thing to me. Don't act in fear. That's all I heard. So I shared that with my financial guy and I said, this is what we're going to do. No fear. And I can remember standing at that window and said, I'm blessed. I'm blessed above all people. And I'd even say the blessed people call me blessed. And that's the attitude. That's the expectation. And you say, well, that sounds kind of boastful. Yeah, but who am I boasting about? Jehovah Jireh. Not me. It's Jehovah Jireh. Glory to God. So let's look at a couple of verses in the New Testament. 2 Corinthians 9:8. If someone says to me, men, what do you think prosperity is? This is the verse that I go to define it. And I know you may well do the same thing. And God is able to make all grace abound to you. Now, he's talking about grace in this chapter. But what is that grace specifically dealing with? If you go back and look at chapter 8, he's telling them that they manifest grace in a lot of areas. But he wants them to manifest grace in this area also, and he's talking about taking up an offering. So he's talking about financial things. So we're to have grace in our finances. And that's not just grace to give, but that's grace to receive as well. So that always, and notice these all and always having all sufficiency in, I'll say, all things instead of everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. So what is having all the provision that we need? The ability to have our needs met. And if we have some things that we strongly desire and we're serving Him, then I don't think it matters at all that we have some things that are nice. If you want to drive a different car or that's what brings you joy, you can have nice things. We just don't want what? Those nice things to have us. But we can have an abundance for every good work. Now, that's my definition of this. But look at verses 9 and 10. As it is written, he scattered abroad. He gave to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. This is quoting a psalm. Now he, the Father, who supplies seed to the sower, and bread for food. Now, so that says he's given us two things. He's given us what we need that we can partake of. And he is equally giving us what? Seed to sow. And so I would just say, we got to be careful then not to eat the seed. And it is really, really easy to do. But he said he's going to give us that. And will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. So he's going to give us what we need so that we can sow. And what are we going to do as we sow and receive? We're going to give thanks. And then the next couple of verses really say that the more thanks we give, the more what? The more grace comes to us, the more seed comes to us, and the more we sow, and it's just going to spiral you right on up to a level of prosperity a level of provision that you never dreamed you could be at, because we're walking in the blessing, experiencing, manifesting in our life Jehovah Jireh. Now, look at 3 John 2, and then we're going to transition. Julie's looking and saying, again, he's never going to get through all this. We'll be okay. 3 John 2. 3 John 2. Beloved, that's you. I pray that in all respects or all things that you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers. Now, I save this one to the end because it ties right in to where we're going. And the same act that purchased your healing, your health, being in good health, spirit, soul, and body, that same act is what also brings upon us all this provision, all this grace, this abundance, this blessing that we walk in that was spoken over people, over Adam. Listen to the Passion Translation for this one. Beloved friend. I like that because that just brings covenant into it to me. Covenant friends. Beloved friend, I pray that you are prospering in every way and that you will continually enjoy good health. Now, that's an expectation that we need to strive for, continually enjoying this. If we're not, then we just raise our expectations, set our hearts to live where he's told us we can. And then we can also begin to live, as we're going to see, in this next name. Now, the key takeaway for me from this verse is that my prospering physically is not just limited to finances. My health can be an abundance just like my finances can. And I can then walk in that perfect peace that includes welfare, as Pastor Trey talks Sunday. Sozo is a good word in the Greek to use for peace. Nothing missing and nothing broken. And this is how we walk in the family name of Jehovah Jireh and now Jehovah Rapha. So go back with me to Genesis 15. And again, let's just look at the context of how this was introduced. Of Exodus 15, it's not Genesis 15. Is that what you were screaming at me, Tricia, that very quietly? Yeah, when I saw what Genesis 15 was, I knew I was in the wrong place. So 22nd verse. Now, what has just happened? Miraculously, the Red Sea is parted, and they walk through on dry land. And Miriam grabs Millie's tambourine and begins playing it. And everybody's celebrating and dancing and rejoicing at how faithful the Lord is and what he's done for them. And then we get to 22. Then Moses led Israel, as he's being led by the Spirit, from the Red Sea, and they went out in the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days' journey in the wilderness, and they found no water. Then it says, and when they came to Marah, they could not drink the water of Marah because they were bitter. Literally, it means brackish. Like trying to drink seawater. And I didn't even like when they started taking seawater and first going through that process that they used. I can remember going to Jekyll Island as a teenager. That was the most gosh-awful water I ever tried to drink. The sulfur smell would just, you'd choke on it almost. But look at verse 24. It was bitter, for they named it Marah, which means that. And look at 24. So in 3 days, the people had gone talking about the greatest things that God had ever done for them, and Things were great. They were all excited. But because they didn't know him in all these names, they didn't hadn't experienced in him, how did they go? They hit rock bottom very quickly. So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, "What should we drink?" Then he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. So we're in types and shadows again of this. How bitter was my sin upon Jesus, upon that cross? And you can all take part of that with me. How bitter was that on him? And so he cried out to the Lord and showed him this tree, and he threw it in the waters, and the waters became sweet. Bitter made sweet. Cancer taken to no cancer. Blocked blood vessels suddenly opened. Hearts that won't beat in right rhythm beating in perfect rhythm. Digestive systems that work perfectly. You can go on and on and on. Things move from bitter to sweet, and it has nothing to do in the physical with a tree landing in water. It's the work of the Lord. And really, when you think about how important water is to sustenance and to our health, you can tie it then in to what's about to happen in 25 and 26. So now we're in 26. This 25 ends by saying he there made a statute and regulation, and there he tested again. And again, the word better is prove. And when I think about the Lord proving us, I like to think about Romans 12, 1 and 2, that we're to prove what that good, acceptable and perfect will of the Lord is. And then in 26, he says, And if you will give earnest heed to the voice of your Lord your God, and do what is right, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes. Now, when we read this verse, what do we have to apply to this verse? The impact of the tree, of the cross. Because Jesus has done that, just like Deuteronomy 28, 1 and 2. And so, because Jesus did all those things, then the Lord says to you and I today, I will put none of the diseases, or I will not allow any of the diseases on you that have been put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer. I am Jehovah Rapha. And I've seen it spelled in different ways, R-O-P-H-E, R-A-P-H-A, but it all means the same thing. He is our healer. Rapha literally means to mend or to cure. So we can say the Lord is our curer, he's our healer. That's what a physician has as a job, the Lord our physician. It can also mean repair and make whole. Now, that make whole is important to me because that's one of the things Jesus said to people in the New Testament. Be whole. And he talked about the lepers being made whole. That total healing. It's not just taking away something. He can take it and remove all the scars and all the things that's in our past from it. This is the only time that I find in Scripture this construct where it calls him Jehovah Rapha. But certainly we see enough illustrations of it. Now you might find it interesting. The first use of the word Rapha is in Genesis 27. And again, to me, the first time a word is used sets the tone for how the Lord wants that used and how he wants it understood every time it is used. So Genesis 20, verse 17, Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids, so that they bore children. He prayed, and they became fruitful. He prayed, and they were able to increase. He prayed, and they were able to multiply. And all that goes what? Right back to the blessing of the Lord operating upon them. Now, for a woman of that day, how important was it? Very, very important. Very important. And you can think about others. And really, a woman in that day, and I think about the book of 1 Samuel, when she's there before the prophet, just pouring out her soul, and he thinks she's drunk because she what? She has no son. And so you can think about others, Moses with Miriam, Naaman in leprosy, Elijah and the Shunammite woman, Hezekiah, all these who were sick were prayed for or got a word from the Lord that was spoken over them, and all of a sudden, they were made whole, nothing missing, nothing broken. Now I want you to go to Leviticus, the 14th chapter. And there's seven verses that we need to look at. Here. Oops. One too many. This is the account of the healing ceremony for a leper. But to understand this, though, and be able to apply the Lord your healer and not separate healing from the work of redemption, we have to remember, what was leprosy a sign of in their day? Sin, great sin. And for me, that's the disease I think about when I think about the living dead. So here we go in verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and said, "This shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. Now he shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall go outside." And I'm not going to take time to teach you every verse in detail. But it says, "The priest shall look, and if the infection of leprosy has been healed in the leper," that word "heal" there is Rapha. So the infection of leprosy has been cured. And I don't know that there was a cure for leprosy. So every one of them had to be a supernatural manifestation of Jehovah Rapha. And by then, they knew this. So they should have understanding. So then in verse 4, the priest shall give orders then. And so here's a ceremony that began to take place. To take two live, clean birds. So birds that were free from deformation, free from the impact of sin, we might say. And cedar wood. We've seen wood before, so we know that's cross. And a scarlet string, blood, and hyssop to apply it, just like they applied the blood on the doorpost, the Egyptians did, just like they gave Jesus the wine. And then he says, the priest shall give orders to slay one bird. And look how this bird is to be slain. In an earthenware vessel. And what do you know about our being? That's all we are, is an earthenware vessel. So that bird is to be slayed, the one bird in the earthenware vessel, over running water. To me, running water involves the Holy Spirit doing a work there. And then it continues on and says, "And as for the live bird, he shall take it together with the cedar wood and the scarlet string and the hyssop, and shall dip them and the live bird in the blood of the bird that was slain over the running water." So he's applying the blood, if I can say it this way, of the one who was sacrificed on the one who is lived and about to be set free. Just like we have been. Now we're talking about here, and we've got to keep this in our mind. We're talking about an act of remission of sin almost. But we're doing this in the context of what? Jehovah Rapha. And doing it in the context of a healing ceremony. And then verse 7. "He shall then sprinkle seven times the one who is to be cleansed from leprosy. And he shall pronounce him clean, and he shall let the live bird go free over the open field." And I would submit to you that is exactly what has happened to us. We've been sprinkled with that blood. The Lord has pronounced you clean, and he has set you free to live life in the fullness of all. And all done because he wants to be Jehovah Rapha to us. Now, a few more verses. Just hold it. Make a note of it. Psalm 30, verse 2. O Lord my God, I cried to you and you healed me. So we've got to ask the question, just as we ask when we talk about the leper coming to Jesus and saying, I know you can, if you will. If you cry out to the Lord, then what do we have a promise of here? That he's going to hear us and help us. And do what? Heal us. So we have that expectation from the Psalms, just like we do today in New Testament Scripture. And then Psalm 103, you know well. Verses 2 and 3. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget none of his benefits, who pardons all your iniquities, and who does what? Heals, cures, mends all your diseases. Now, I'm not going to read Isaiah 53, 4 and 5 or 10 with you tonight. But you'll notice in your notes, I've left it under the part New Testament. Because to me, this is a look at what happened to on the inside with Jesus in the spirit realm versus the external look that we get in the four Gospels. But what do we know? He received stripes. He was punished so that he would take and bear our sickness. And just like that live bird, we then are to go free of not only sin, but that sickness as well. Now, think about Numbers 21, 4 through 9. The people have sinned again against Moses. They acknowledge it. They say, pray to the Lord, let him show you. And he raises the bronze serpent up on the standard, up on the as a banner. What was being raised up there? All of their sin. So when Jesus was raised on that cross, yes, he was raised as an individual, but what else was raised with him? All of my sin. And what did he tell them to do? To look at that thing. And that doesn't mean to glance at it, but to focus your eyes about on it. And verse 9 here says that it came about that when they bit any man, when he would look at the bronze serpent, he lived. So what is this saying? Jehovah Rapha is being displayed in the lives of these people when their sin is removed from them and life comes to them, the Zoe kind of life. Now, where else do we see this? Well, we see it all through the New Testament, Matthew 8, 16 and 17. When evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out spirits with a word and healed all who were sick, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself, and I probably said this to you before, but go through and do a study sometime of the different times it's he himself. He took it. He himself, Jesus, at that point, the only begotten of the Father, someone who I could never be, he took my sin. And then, as a result of it, he did what? He carried my infirmities and carried away, or he took my infirmities and he carried away my diseases. It's like Jesus. The Lord says, you just speak my word, and I've already made provision for what you're going to speak. And that's why when we quote this verse, then we can look at the provision that the Lord has already been made for it and say, I'm healed. It doesn't matter what I see right at this moment. I'm healed because in 1 Peter 2:24, he says, by his stripes I were healed. So it has already happened. So that is who I am as a completed fact. And that's something that I'm really meditating a lot on, and probably will teach it here, and not tomorrow and maybe not the next week, but sometime before long in healing school, that this healing is got to be, we've got to see it as so ours already that we can remain our joy in the midst of what we're going on. And I'm convinced that we're being attacked as a body of Christ in some ways right now that is trying to separate and discourage us with all the things that are going on in the world, the attacks coming against the church, the attacks of the physical body. But he's already provided it. The Lord our healer. Let's look at Matthew 12:15. But when Jesus knew it, he withdrew from there. And this is talking about when he knew what had happened to his good friend John. And great multitudes followed him. And he did what? Healed them all. Every one of them. The Lord our healer. In Luke 6:19, and the whole multitude sought to touch him. And I'm actually going to use this one tomorrow in healing school. For this phrase is there. For power went out from him and healed him all. And what I'll say to you tonight is, think about that ceremony that we looked at with the leper. Think about Jesus, or the sin being raised up on that pole, Jesus taking our sin. What we're seeing here is that every time this work of redemption that we have, what we celebrated Sunday, this resurrection power is available for you and I today. That same power that will bring healing, that raised him from the dead, it is available. It is in us today because that's the Jesus that we identify with. So I would ask the question, I know we've gone through this quickly. Has the name of the Lord changed? No. What gives people the right to say the Lord doesn't heal today? His name hasn't changed. Thus his nature hasn't changed. Thus he is going to be today the Lord our healer, the Lord our provision, just as he was those days. So he's still Jehovah Rapha. Now, concerning Jesus, that's the same thing it says about him in Revelation. Who is? So he is what he is today, manifesting names. Well, you said, yeah, but this was years ago. He lives today. He lives in that present. Then it says he was and he will be. So as long as we're on this earth, we have the promise that Jehovah Rapha and Jehovah Jireh and all that blessing is ours. That is the will of the Lord, to be our provider and to be our healer. And that's why these two are such, to me, important redemptive names. And they really go together. That is what is wrapped up in our salvation. That is what's really wrapped up in us walking in his peace. Soundness and wholeness. Nothing missing. No lack. Nothing broken.